I'm Greg Johnson. Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. We are doing an impromptu kind of last minute live stream because it just turned out that it's a good time to do it. And my guest today is Jason Kessler. Jason, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you.
The purpose of this live stream is to help you raise funds for your legal battle in the aftermath of the Unite the Right rally that took place almost 4 years ago now in August of 2017. So because there are always new people coming into this, sometimes we have to talk about stuff that's old hat for us because it's quite new for them. It's old history or it's prehistory for them. And so can you give us a brief sort of recap of what Unite the Right was and how this ended up basically being nearly 4 years of protracted lawfare for you?
Yeah, sure. And we'll have plenty of new stuff for the people who already know about this. There's a lot of recent developments. But you're right, about 4 years ago, I applied for a permit to hold a rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, in Lee Park, where there was a statue to Confederate General Robert E. Lee. A lot of you could say Democrats, but people who hate white people were trying to take that statue down. And a number of people from the alt-right and just normal conservative politics came to protest it. But a lot of things went wrong. The government, first of all, tried to rescind our permit at the last minute. And I had to fight a court battle, which I won with the ACLU to secure the permit. And then even having gotten a win from a federal court, the police stood down. They were instructed by the police chief, Al Thomas, to let them fight because it would make it easier to declare an unlawful assembly. So we were attacked by numerous Antifa paramilitary organizations with they had guns, they had improvised flamethrowers, rocks, Singapore canes, everything. Kind of weapon you could possibly imagine. And they attacked people on the way into the venue. And police used that as a pretext to disband the rally. And it just led to so much chaos. They pushed the alt-right people and the conservative people into the Antifa. It was a disaster. And then to make matters worse, now there is a legal battle over who's to blame for that. I've sued the city of Charlottesville to hold them accountable for violating our First Amendment rights. But to get to that, we have to beat a lawsuit that was filed against us alleging that we're to blame for the violence.
Okay, that's important. I am putting up your givesendgo.com/Unite the Right URL, and also your utrdefense.org URL. They're on the screen. Those are the two best places for people to go if they want to support Jason. Now, you can also send us DLive tokens. I'll send the DLive tokens that come in today during this stream to Jason, and I'll just pass them along. I think he's got a DLive account, or I'll send him cash, whatever. And you can also earmark money for Jason at Entropy. So go to entropystream.live/countercurrents. Jason, do you have an Entropy account, by the way?
I do have one. I'm not sure what the URL is, but if people go to my Twitter, twitter.com/themaddimension, you'll see in my Twitter profile, my link tree. And that has all that stuff in it, my Entropy and everything else.
Okay, that's good. I will actually just pull this up right now and try and get this quickly in. Yeah, here it is, Entropy. So yeah, it's entropystream.live / Jason Kessler. So I'll just put this in the chat here, or in the, I'll create a banner for it and I'll put that up. Right now. So
and it's important to note that the money is not just for me. There, within this lawfare that's been waged against us, a lot of people have dropped out. You know, a lot of people don't have lawyers or indigent or just getting beaten up, really. But there are a few survivors who are still fighting this. And I'm one of them, and my legal team is part of that. And it's people who, frankly, don't even like each other. And some of the listeners might have feelings about one party or another, but we're all working together. It's myself, Nathan D'Amigo, Matt Parrott, Patrick Casey, TWP, and Identity Europa. So those are the final survivors, essentially.
Interesting. So that is an interesting group of people. Who are the people who dropped out along the way?
Have people that are still kind of fighting it, but they're pro se, and they're just gonna, there are some people who didn't even bother to fight. Like you have somebody like Daily Stormer and Asmodor, who, you know, Andrew England just is dodging lawsuits left and right and doesn't even bother to respond to them. Asmodor has more serious problems. He has criminal charges he's on the lam from. So this is probably the least of his worries. Then you have people like Eli Mosley, who was Spencer's henchman or consigliere or whatever during the Unite the Right period. And he's dropped out and is getting sanctions levied against him. They even threw him in jail for a little bit for contempt of court for not participating in the discovery process. And then you have another step up, which is the people who ran out of money and don't have lawyers but are still fighting it. To some extent, and that would be Christopher Cantwell, who is basically writing handwritten legal documents from prison. You have Richard Spencer, who I guess ran out of money at some point or wasn't paying his lawyer. You have Matt Heimbach, who's in a similar boat. He's not represented with the rest of the TWP people because he wasn't participating meaningfully in the legal process at the time that he had an attorney. So I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. I don't know who else has dropped out.
So let me ask you, who are the people who are suing you and what is the pretext and who's behind them? Where is their money coming from? Because I understand these people have tons and tons of money that's being thrown at them basically to harass you. To harass the organizations that people belong to. It's Lawfare is basically an attempt to maliciously bankrupt people, harass people, and render them politically ineffectual. So who are these people who are doing this?
Well, I mean, first of all, let me say that this isn't really about me. I wouldn't go through all this process. I wouldn't fight as hard as I have if it was just about my financial future. You know, what these people are doing don't mean anything to me, but it's about more than that. These people are trying to use the legal system to repeal civil rights victories, you know, that we have gained over the last century or so. When you're talking about the right of people who have incredibly offensive speech, like the Nazis who wanted to march through Skokie, you know, that was upheld by the Supreme Court, their right to do that. Then you have Brandenburg v. Ohio is one of the primary free speech cases, and that involved a Ku Klux Klan leader who was talking theoretically at some point in the future about the potential for violence breaking out. And so that was upheld as free speech victory. So what they're trying to do now with this legal effort, with Charlottesville as a centerpiece, is to roll those things back, either through precedents by saying, you know, the internet culture where people talk smack at one another is literal and is a conspiracy to do violence, but also practically, because everybody who has internet access knows what happens when you try and speak about pro-white issues or any of the issues of any substance these days. You get physically attacked, you get threatened, you could probably get murdered. I mean, the Antifa just about murdered Andy Ngo in the streets of Portland the other night. And then you have the second issue of the police standing down, which happened in Berkeley before it happened in Charlottesville, and then happened in Charlottesville. So those two things are a dangerous brew. If you want to go in public and speak your mind, you have to, in a lot of cases, be able to defend yourself. And so it's just a practical issue that if you go out and you defend yourself against people who are trying to silence you through violence, no one is going to go out and speak anymore if they get hit with a multi-million dollar lawsuit. You know, so I cannot allow these people to beat me because it would be a bad example for anybody else. But to say who is behind this, these are some of the most powerful people with so many different agendas. They're being the primary litigator is a woman named Roberta Kaplan. She's represented all kinds of awful people like Harvey Weinstein. She it's famous because she tried a case before the Supreme Court, which overturned the gay marriage ban. And so now she's doing all kinds of almost purely politically motivated stuff, like multiple lawsuits against Donald Trump, this lawsuit against us. And other than that, all she does is work for hedge funds, and her law firm is chock full of like the brood of the most powerful Democrats in the country, you know? So like Andrew Cuomo's niece is working at her law firm. Their litigators, like this guy, Joshua Matz, was the legal counsel for Adam Schiff during the impeachment hearing of Donald Trump, the first one. And I believe he was the legal counsel for Jerry Nadler in the second impeachment hearing. All of their friends who are testifying at those impeachment hearings, you know, they know each other. They're all Obama DOJ people. They're connected to the shadiest Democrat circles. Their nonprofit, Integrity First for America, has raised millions of dollars. And it's done it through Democrat circles and elite Jewish circles predominantly. And I don't mean that as a slur against any Jewish people. There are many fine Jewish people, but these people are the most narcissistic, self-obsessed. They're for everything critical that they could say about white nationalists or whatever, they are the mirror image of that. They have no room to talk whatsoever. So they are being funded big time by the ADL. They're being funded by all of these extremely wealthy Jewish individuals, some of whom probably, you know, are being deluded into thinking that we're some kind of threat to somebody when we just tried to do a rally. They're being funded by Reid Hoffman, who definitely is a malignant individual. He was the founder of LinkedIn, and he's run like numerous disinformation campaigns. He uses his finances as seed money, like he did a disinformation campaign against Judge Roy Moore in Alabama, numerous other campaigns. And he's a buddy of Jeffrey Epstein. Even after Jeffrey Epstein had his first trial for raping and molesting underage girls, Epstein called up this guy, Reid Hoffman, and Reid Hoffman got him a meeting with Mark Zuckerberg, who's the Tesla guy? I forget his name.
Elon Musk.
Yeah, Elon Musk and a bunch of other big tech giants. So this guy was trying to whitewash Jeffrey Epstein and bring him back into the elite circles after his first underage prostitution bust. So total scumbag. They seem to also be financed by people like Craig from Craigslist and Natalie Portman. The other law firms, other than Kaplan's, you have Boy Schiller Flexner, which is one of the top law firms in the country and has represented, once again, Harvey Weinstein. They've all done dealings with Weinstein. They've represented the DNC. They've represented Al Gore during the Hanging Chad controversy, the election against Bush. They've represented the NFL and a bunch of other people. So they are the giant. They are Goliath. And here we are is David. And the only stone we have to throw at them is the truth. If we did not have the truth on our side, they would have crushed us like a bug by now, because the resource advantage is so vast.
Yeah. So let me ask you, what is the pretext, though, that they're suing on exactly? Who's the plaintiff here? I know there are lots of people who are backing them up, but who are the plaintiffs, and what's their actual accusation against you guys? What's the crime you supposedly committed? And is this a civil suit or is it a criminal thing?
It's just a civil suit, but they treat it like they're prosecuting some kind of criminal thing. They're conspiracy theorists. They're deluded disinformation peddlers, and they think that they're prosecuting a criminal case in civil court because the Trump administration just loved white nationalists and the Charlottesville marchers and didn't want to prosecute us. It's just total hogwash. There's no evidence to back up all the things that they're saying. And the Biden administration is in there now. So what can they possibly have to complain about now as far as the DOJ? But their plaintiffs are a mixed bag of Charlottesville. Some of them are Charlottesville residents. I think some of them aren't. I'm not 100% sure about that. I know they're not all living there now. You have their primary plaintiff is Elizabeth Steins, who was a UVA student. Basically, she was there at the August 11th torch march. Basically, nothing happened to her. She was following Richard Spencer around, live streaming him and giggling. And then the next day, she said that she was near where the car incident happened with James Fields. And so she had suffered emotional distress from that. A number of their plaintiffs are like that. There's two categories of their plaintiffs. There's the ones who are like clearly like politically motivated actors like Elizabeth Steins. You have this phony left-wing preacher named Seth Whispleway, who I have a gazillion bites of evidence was collaborating and conspiring with the Antifa, supporting violent activities. He is a crazy-eyed loon who's drunk a bunch of left-wing Kool-Aid. And he's also somebody who didn't suffer any real injuries. He says that he was pushed by Augustus Invictus. Okay. I've never seen any evidence of that, by the way. And then you have the second category of people who are actual injured parties. And I do feel sorry for them, you know, regardless of what their politics are. They were hit by the car that went down that street that day. But as bad as I feel for them and their injuries, I did not have anything to do with that. And as far as I'm aware, I don't know of any of the other people other than James Fields who they sued who have anything to do with that. But they're trying to use, these attorneys are trying to use this horrible situation of these people being injured and the sympathy that's going to garner for most of the population and use that to extract a political vengeance on this movement for speech that they don't like.
Absolutely. And we can't allow that to happen. One thing that's really happened that's remarkable since Unite the Right is we've had a year of it now. We've had a year of Antifa rioting, and we've had the local city establishments, like in the city of Portland especially, turning a blind eye to that. The pattern is really very interesting, and you have the same pattern of behavior. It's cropped up hundreds of times. Literally, there was a riot every day in Portland for close to a year. So hundreds of times this has happened in the last year. The exact same kind of stuff that happened at Unite the Right without the Unite the Right people, right? I think that's very, very telling. What's going on here is Antifa with sympathizers in the state apparatus and the political establishment, the legal establishment, the oligarchy in various places has gone out and terrorized people who they disagree with politically. That is a pattern that's been deeply established now. And it's a pattern that doesn't require your presence. It doesn't require Richard Spencer. Is that going to be at all useful to you in this case? Because it strikes me that if there's any conspiracy pattern here, the conspiracy is a conspiracy of people in the Charlottesville government with Antifa to terrorize you people and suppress your freedom of speech. And we've seen that pattern replicated over and over. And why wouldn't it be? Because it works.
Yeah. I mean, there were absolutely conspiracies against us. I mean, I've been gathering so much evidence, and I'm not the only one. And I've pretty much nailed down the Antifa side of things. I've listened to their podcasts where they go and they speak anonymously and think I don't know who they are. I'm from Charlottesville. I know their voices. I know who they are. And I match up their statements with other people's statements, and I have the videos of the violence they did. And I know what their plan was. Their plan was to disrupt the marches and speeches by any means necessary. Those are their own words. They had comms teams. They had a comms director. They had weapons. They were going around with bags of weapons, handing them out to people. You know, I mean, their intent was basically to provoke violence, you know, by slapping at people, hitting them with canes, running into the park, attacking people viciously, and then running back out again, hoping to lure people out of the park where they could get beaten down by the superior numbers of counter protesters that were outside the park. And all of that was to get the police to declare the unlawful assembly. And whether the police were specifically like coordinating with them, I don't know that that is the case, but clearly they knew what the Antifa were going to do. And there were members of the Charlottesville government like Wes Bellamy who were directly encouraging Black Lives Matter and Antifa to do what they did. The police and the Charlottesville government knew we were going to be attacked, and they didn't have to say, is it okay if we collaborate with you, Antifa? They can just let what was going to happen, and they did, and then use that as a pretext to violate our rights. And the pattern has been going on, and it started before Charlottesville. It was going on in Berkeley when they were burning the UC Berkeley campus to shut down Milo Yiannopoulos and to shut down Ann Coulter and many others. It's just that I read the situation wrong. I thought, this is not who we are. We are a country that supports robust free speech, and we're going to snap back like a rubber band to where we used to be before. But with Charlottesville, that band broke. And the ACLU said that they're not supporting free speech for right-wing political dissidents anymore. You had a lot of people who were free speech attorneys, allegedly, and supported even like extreme free speech, like the right to burn a cross or something like really offensive to most people. And then they backed away from that, not only because of Charlottesville, but also because they're just absolutely deranged by Trump and the other things that are going on in our country right now. But it's a sad situation, and you can only see it getting worse because the left is able to riot and tear down the statues, which is absolutely about them trying to get more vengeance against us for the Unite the Right rally, which they will never let go. And burning down, seizing police departments, burning them to the ground, murdering dozens of people, over 30 people. It's a horrible, horrible situation. But that, for them, that's free speech. And the ACLU and the Democrat politicians are going to come in and say, well, there's just a few bad apples. It was mostly peaceful. But for us, you know, it's like the media will take a camera and put it on the most offensive speech that they can possibly find or something, and then say, well, this is typical of all of them. So they're all horrible people, and they shouldn't have rights anymore. It's a disgusting situation, but it's only getting worse to where if you want to have free speech, you have to have the right opinion.
Yeah, that is very alarming. So let me ask you, when is this going to trial? Have they finally set the date?
They have set a date. The reason this thing is 4 years and it still hasn't happened yet is because it was supposed to have happened last October, but then COVID hit, and then there were all these safety concerns about whether it would be safe to have that many people in the courtroom with the pandemic going on. So it has been set for October 25th of this year. And by all accounts, it is going to happen this time. Although there are a lot of questions which have come up very recently about exactly how it's going to go down. It's scheduled to be a four-week trial, which is very long. This is very complicated. So many defendants, so many plaintiffs, incredibly complicated situation with a lot of evidence. But Judge Moon, who's the presiding judge, recently held a conference, which included the plaintiffs, my attorney, as well as some of the pro se people like Heimbach and Spencer. And they were discussing, first of all, whether it's realistic to have it in Charlottesville, and then how long it would actually take. The interesting part, nobody was aware that this conference was going to happen. It was totally generated by the judge. And he's probably had a good reason to do it. He's saying that Charlottesville is going to be too dangerous for this trial. I mean, it's clear that it's going to be a spectacle, and the plaintiffs want it to be that way. They let drop during this hearing because the judge was suggesting we move the trial from Charlottesville to either Lynchburg, Virginia, or Stanton, Virginia, which are smaller towns. But from my understanding, they have larger courthouses, which could more easily accommodate all the different people that are going to be there. Without some of the high octane stuff that's going to come from Charlottesville and all the Antifa and BLM groups that reside there. But essentially, they let drop that Integrity First, the people financing this lawsuit, they don't want it to move because they say that they've dropped enormous amounts of cash for this thing in Charlottesville to make it the spectacle that they want it to be. They dropped a huge deposit for the Omni across the street, $100,000. They say that they're going to be out $100,000. If they're putting down a $100,000 deposit on a hotel, I can only imagine what the actual cost would be and what kind of lavish expenses they have. They've got to have the most like evil, demonic people in the country all over being shipped in for this thing. ADL, SPLC, like every like awful person you could think of, probably bring in a bunch of MSNBC people. And they're already planning their coronation, their celebration. No amount of money is too much because they feel like they're going to crush us. But the truth is that they will almost certainly beat down the people who do not have attorneys, but we can absolutely win this. And now is the time. And that's why I've decided to do this fundraiser to help me and my guys out, because this is the time that there's no greater fight. We can stop them right in their tracks. This is a gargantuan juggernaut that is charging for us, but they just do not have the facts to support what they're trying to do. And we can disrupt their party. It will be just like the 2016 election when Hillary lost and all her supporters were crying. And that's what I want for them.
I want to see Roberta Kaplan cry. And if you folks out there listening want to see Bobby Kaplan weep and MSNBC weep and Rachel Maddow weep and so forth, let's make all of these people cry. I want to hear their pain, frankly. So support this, please. So go to givesendgo.com/UTR. And go to utrdefense.org and help out. You can also help out by going to entropystream.live/Jason Kessler. Please do that as well. Donate your lemons, ice creams, ninjaginis, and yes, ninjets here. And I will pass this along to Jason as well. I think this is very important. And the reason why I'm supporting this, aside from the fact that it's a great precedent to try and set, and we need to fight this, is that Jason already has a proven record here, because he's been going at this relentlessly. First of all, okay, before Unite the Right even happened, he did the legal footwork, the filing of permits, the lawsuits and things necessary to make it happen. There are a lot of people who are just too lazy or intimidated by the legal process. They can't respond to letters in a timely fashion. They can't do anything like that. Jason has proved himself tireless, and he's stuck to it. He's stuck to this for more than 4 years. And during the lawfare that's been going on, he has been tireless in exposing these people. The discovery phase cuts both ways. Discovery cuts both ways, as they always say. And these people have been trying to put a case together about Unite the Right being a vast criminal conspiracy, the alt-right being a conspiracy. They've tried to bring lawsuits against people who weren't even there, right? And this is pure harassment. Well, Jason has been untangling their conspiracies too. Jason, do you want to share some of the findings that you've made over the last couple of years? I've seen this come out on your website, and it's on been on Twitter and so forth. I find it very impressive that you're showing the connections that these people have that go all the way to the most wealthy and powerful scumbags in the country, people like Jeffrey Epstein, and you know all the way from people like that to the lowest of the Antifa. What's some of the discovery stuff that you brought out, and some of the potential conflicts of interest, some of the smoking gun conspiracy stuff with the city government and so forth? Just a few highlights.
Sure. So we've actually gotten very little from the actual discovery process for various reasons. We really haven't done too much in that regard. Most of the evidence that I've gotten has been through just simple internet research, looking on social media, and I've learned to do the same thing that a lot of the Antifa brag about, you know, the same thing that anti-fash and these people do. I do the same thing, but I don't publish all of it. You know, I'm giving it to my attorneys and letting them prepare for this this battle that we're going to fight. But the other thing is trying to get things from the government. You know, filing Freedom of Information Act requests, because it's pretty damn clear to me that there is a lot more that should and could come out about Charlottesville. And it's essential that we win this signs case, because if we win that, we're going to move forward in our offensive case, and then we'll get real discovery against the government. But until then, I'm filing a request looking for follow-ups on, say, the independent review that was done by the Charlottesville government about its own misconduct during the rally. And things came out, like the fact that that a lot of the planning for the rally was done through text messages and emails between various parties, like the city manager, who was the head of the government there, his name was Maurice Jones, and that police chief, Al Thomas. And the independent review had stated that that the police chief and his command staff at the police department were destroying text messages. They were also creating like phony documents and backdating them to make it seem like they'd taken measures that they hadn't taken during the rally. And so because in America, most places have Freedom of Information Act laws, you can request government documents, and they're supposed to be available to the public. So I would take things in that report, like I would request those text messages. Where are those deleted text messages? And what I learned is that basically, like, the major weakness of these FOIA laws is that if the government deletes something, then, oh, well, they don't have it, so they don't have to turn it over, supposedly. And so I tried to go from the police chief to let me see what text messages the city manager had. And then when I asked for those, they lied and said that they did not have the emails and the text messages. So I filed my own lawsuit acting as my own attorney, and I beat them. And I got them to admit that they had wiped the city manager's phone, which is illegal in Virginia. And by the way, deleting these public documents, these public records, that is supposed to be a class one misdemeanor in Virginia, which, if convicted, would bar somebody from ever serving in public office again. These are serious crimes, but they're being allowed to go because the people that were harmed, in this case us, are so hated that they think that they don't have to do anything, and good, they deserve it. But that's not good enough for me. I'm going to fight them. And so we have a separate lawsuit now fighting them on that Public Records Act aspect of it. But so far, that's a huge revelation. They said they wiped the city manager's phone. This is the crucial evidence. Like, they were talking very frankly about what they were doing as far as like stand down, heckler's veto stuff, allowing people to fight, allowing violence to ensue. Very frank discussions. I have some of it. I don't have all of it. And so it's very fishy that they are all destroying this. And then when I file lawsuits, they fight me tooth and nail over it. So in my new lawsuit, it's a Public Records Act case, which basically details the way that public officials are supposed to preserve records so they can be requested by FOIA. Now they're saying, oh, wait, we found out the phone wasn't wiped. It was damaged. So now that begs the question, how were this phone damaged? You know, what was it like, bleached like Hillary Clinton did to her servers? Did they smash it with a hammer? Did they drop it in a toilet? And we're wrangling with them over how we can get into that phone, because supposedly we can get to that stuff at some point. But I want a vendor, like a electronic forensics person, to come in and do it. They want the police department to do it. I don't trust that police department. That's like letting the fox police the hen house. Besides that, I've gotten frank emails that have been sent between the police chief and the city manager. They sent each other a really interesting article from Portland, from Portland about 5 days before the rally, and the headline of that email, that article was "As police stand by, Antifa and the alt-right beat each other bloody in the streets." So that's a pretty interesting email for the guy who later said "let them fight" to have sent to the other guy who was in the room with them. So that's just a small sample of what we found. There's so much that's out there.
That is really interesting, and that's really good work. And these sorts of rewards only come to the people who are actually sticking to it. And you're engaged in what one of the major kinds of intelligence research, which is called open source intelligence research. You're actually finding things that are already out there and putting together information, and also then availing yourself of things like Freedom of Information Act requests to add more information. And obviously you're hitting them where it hurts if they're panicking and breaking the law to hide information. So this is important. You see, one of the things that I want to come out of this case, besides just defeating these people, is when you go on and have your own suit, you see, in 50 years' time, I do not want the murder of Heather Heyer, a young woman, Heather Heyer, to be this stupid cliche that we hear all the time, like the March on Selma, you know, and all this stuff from the civil rights era. A lot of this stuff is hokum. A lot of it's false. I don't want in 100 years' time for there to be a mountain of lies like these completely preposterous stories being told about what happened in Tulsa 100 years ago. I don't want this to be entombed under a mountain of establishment lies. I would like our side to be able to dismantle the Charlottesville narrative that the enemy has been putting in place, because they want to bury us under that mountain of bullshit, basically. And the more information that we have, especially if we can start getting them to disclose discovery, I think we can turn this around. And it only happens because there are people who just do the work, and Jason does the work. So folks, givesendgo.com/unitetheright. Go there and help him out, and also go to unitetherightdefense.org and help out Jason. You can also help him out at entropystream.live/Jason Kessler. And you can send your lemons, diamonds, ninjaginis, and ninjets. Let's just go for the ninjaginis and ninjets. Let's just aim high, right? And I will pass all this along as well. It's very, very important. Lawsuits cost money, and legal wins cost money. And you've got How many attorneys working on this with you now, Jason? And can you mention their names, or is that something you want to keep to yourself?
Well, there are a number of attorneys, and certain parties like League of the South have their own attorney. But for my legal team, we have two. That's James Kalinich, and his address is listed on the utrdefense.org site if you want to send cash or check instead of doing an electronic donation. And then our local counsel in Virginia is Elmer Woodard. And I just want to say a word about the website, the givesandgo.com/UTR. We're very, very lucky to have this website because I've tried so many different payment processors over the years, and we get shut down before we're able to do anything consequential. This one was not set up by me. It was set up by our attorney, James Kalinich. And so that's part of the reason that it's still up, is because the money is not going to us. It's going directly to the attorney, and there's different legal ramifications for trying to take down an attorney's fundraiser for somebody's legal defense than there would be for just somebody who's trying to make a buck on something. But this site, Gibson Go, has supported a lot of other efforts for right-wing people, including the Proud Boys. That is important that people have a legal defense, regardless of whatever mud that some journalists can throw at me and the people who attended Charlottesville or the Proud Boys or anybody else. It has to be adjudicated in a court of law. It's heinous and it's evil, frankly, for people to try and beat folks in court by taking away their right to defend themselves. It's un-American. You know, and that's an overused term, but that this is totally an instance where that applies. So once we started raising money on GivesandGo, the enemies noticed that. So the executive director of Integrity First is a woman named Amy Spitalnik, who's total scumbag propagandist, who's worked for the New York DA's office and has worked for J Street, a left-wing Israeli lobby. And she started saying, these people, they're raising money and their primary supporter is at 14HH. And she said that means 14 words plus Heil Hitler. But when you go to the actual account that she was linking to on Twitter, it's not even a political account. It's for the 14 Holy Helpers, a Catholic school for the deaf in Buffalo, New York. And I put that up on my Twitter. Anybody can see it. Just Google 14 Holy Helpers. So she's making up this totally fraudulent libel against us. And then she's got these reporters that are jumping into her feed, like Will Carlos from USA Today, saying, show me, send this over to me. So they're just like chomping at the bit. This law firm or this nonprofit, Integrity First, they haven't put out their financials since 2018, but back in 2018, they'd already raised $9 million. How much money do you think they have now? Probably $20 million or something. And that was before the ADL was funding them. So that's not good enough for them. And they're not comfortable with the evidence that they have in their case. So they want to do this un-American thing and take away an attorney's ability to finance his operation, to give people a legal defense. It's total bullshit. So we're very lucky to have that website. And every time people donate, it goes directly to the attorney. So it's not like they're holding it for a certain period of time. So we will definitely get it. And it's good to use it while we still have it.
Absolutely. So do you think the change of venue will happen? Is that something that's possible, or has it just been floated? And are you supporting the change of venue?
Yeah, I am. I definitely do think that it's a good idea. So, I mean, I was shocked by it. I didn't think that it was in the realm of possibility. There's so many people who I've talked to about this case, that say, well, don't you think that, um, that you should try for a change of venue. And my experience has been with all of the cases I've been involved in, civil, criminal, whatever, because they tried a bunch of things that didn't work against me, including criminal things. And all of the attorneys that I worked with have always just, it's not even possible to get change of venue. You know, it almost never happens. And you see it in other high publicity cases, like how could the jury pool have been possibly been any more tainted than it was in Minneapolis during the Chauvin trial? And he didn't really change of venue.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's not just about like the jury pool. We're talking or the judge is talking about the safety of the issue. I mean, if you've been in Charlottesville, I mean, I was looking at their voting trends last night. They are like overwhelmingly Democrat. I mean, it's like 86% voted for the Democrat in the most recent presidential election. And most of these people are so far to the left that they don't even like Biden. You know, they're Antifa communist style leftists rather than establishment Democrats. And you're going to have all kinds of operations. That UVA school there is just totally tainted now and full of left-wing activists, like totally brainwashed, poor kids brainwashed by these fanatical professors. And so you're going to have people that are looking to do violence. And I don't agree with Richard Spencer on much, but one of the things that he said is, you know, he's been attacked by activists in the past and he has reservations about that. And I do agree that is a major, major problem. These attorneys on the other side, they keep saying that one of their primary budget line items is getting security. Well, people who can't afford attorneys aren't going to be able to afford security. So are you going to have people like infamous individuals like Matt Heimbach and Richard Spencer walking through the street, just getting attacked in front of cameras? And if you think that anybody is afraid to attack somebody in front of a camera, I mean, look what they did to me at that press conference that I tried to hold the day after the rally. And the media doesn't care. They cheered it on. You know,
absolutely. How many gifts of Richard Spencer getting punched in front of a camera on inauguration day are on Twitter? Yeah. So exactly. Yeah, there's ample evidence that that's the case. In fact, it would be interesting if somebody could do a count of the number of times that GIF has been tweeted out by assholes on the other side. Jason, one of the things that was really interesting in recent months that came out was an article on the Gateway Pundit about the drone footage of Unite the Right and a write-up that went along with that that was extremely revealing and I thought extremely supportive of your account. I'm going to hit enter or send. I just posted a link to that in the chat on DLive. Can you talk a little bit about that and will that be part of the evidence that you discuss?
Yeah, it'll absolutely be part of the evidence. And we had drone footage already. This is new drone footage, which captures even more that we didn't have before. And I would highly encourage everybody to check out that Gateway Pundit article because it breaks it down for people. You can actually watch the drone footage, which captures pretty much everything at the rally from a bird's eye perspective. But it has timestamps of important events like right-wing activists being attacked and so forth. So you can see exactly what happened. And it shows everything unvarnished, unedited, the way that everything about Charlottesville has been presented. So you can see, they always talk about that one guy with the Nazi flag. Well, there's a bunch of people with communist flags, hammers and sickles. That's a murderous ideology that has killed millions of people around the world. And those were the counter protesters. That's what they're about. So this drone footage was captured actually through an interesting thing. There's so many lawsuits that came out of Unite the Right. And one of them was a defamation lawsuit that was filed by a guy named Brennan Gilmore, who is the individual who filmed the James Fields incident. And he sued Alex Jones and Jim Hoft of the Gateway Pundit, saying that they had defamed him. So And I guess that their defamation, I don't know exactly what it was. They said that he was like a State Department official and, you know, it was up to no good or something. But so his lawsuit has been allowed to move forward. So they get to do discovery and they put in a lot of different discovery requests. That's interesting. That's something I've been keeping my eye on. They've tried to depose the police chief. They've tried to depose the mayor. They've filed all kinds of subpoenas for evidence. And one of them was for this drone footage. And so they received it. This was the first piece of evidence they got. And so they had one of their journalists do a write-up in Gateway Pundit. And we were very happy that Gateway Pundit was able to do this article. So many outside of like the white identity publications and organizations, no one wanted to touch Charlottesville for so long, even though it was every bit as much of a screw job and a fake media generated event in a lot of ways as what January 6th became. I mean, in terms of like them, the media not being honest about what happened, trying to turn it into a propaganda event, so on and so forth. And I think a lot of like normal conservatives, Trump supporters, after witnessing what happened on January 6th, which they saw with their own eyes what happened, and then they saw how the media portrayed it, continuing to say, for instance, that Brian Sicknick, the police officer, was murdered when he did not was not killed by protesters. He died of natural causes. It was only Trump supporters that died on January 6th, the protesters, including an unarmed woman, Ashley Babbitt. And so when the people see the way that that was presented by the media, that I think a lot of people are turning a corner and thinking, well, what else did the media lie to us about? And I think that the comparison that a lot of people are going to look at is with Charlottesville.
Yeah, absolutely. Another reason why we have to basically prevent this from being another brick in their wall of lies, another monument that they trot out constantly. I you know, Heather Heyer, I'm so sick of hearing this pious nonsense about the murder of Heather Heyer, like the murder of George Floyd. These people love to piously trot out these fake martyrs, and I'm tired of it. We have to fight this tooth and nail. So,
with regards to Heather Heyer, I shouldn't have said anything that I said in the past about that, you know, and I'm sorry for that. And, you know, I think I don't even want to touch that, to be honest with you. But as far as the larger thing about the narrative of why things ended up the way that they ended up, you know, that needs to be told. And a victory in court is something that is going to be indisputable. Even some fake propaganda site like Wikipedia will have to acknowledge a win in federal court. And so I think you're right on the money when you talk about the historical importance. There's the legal importance and there's the historical importance, and they are trying to make it, and they're already putting Charlottesville in history books. And so what would that do to people? Like what kind of a red pill would that be for people to have this fake narrative in the history books, and then you see their court determine something totally opposite from that? And I think that the enemy knows how important this is to history as well. And that's why they're devoting millions and millions of dollars to it, why they're fighting tooth and nail to something that is so false. Like when they talk about the Unite the Right organizers conspiring with James Fields, the police officers who investigated that, both the Charlottesville police officers and the FBI, they had his phone. They went to his home and went through his computers, searched everything. Not only was there no conspiracy to murder Heather Heyer with the organizers of the event, there wasn't any communication at all. So that is the number one fact about this whole conspiracy that people need to know. It is totally made up. And they want to fabricate a set of circumstances where they can get a jury to agree to something that is false, and then say, "Oh, well, this is what history should know about Unite the Right. We had a court decision saying there was a conspiracy." It's total bullshit. And that's something that I would fight not just 4 years, I would fight 100 years if I had to stop that from happening.
Right. You are not responsible for the death of Heather Heyer. That's one of the things that these people want to argue, that somehow you and Richard Spencer and Matt Heimbach, by exercising your First Amendment rights, are somehow connected with murder, that there's a conspiracy here. That I think is very, very damaging. And it's obviously designed to chill freedom of speech, and it's designed to wreck people who stand up for white rights and white interests. And we simply can't allow that to happen. I do want to really poop their party. I'd love to see this be a victory for our guys, and that you just keep moving forward on this. We're lucky that you're so damn stubborn. There have been a lot of people who have been attacked in this who just gave up, walked away from it.
This thing would have been over a long time ago if I hadn't kept fighting, but we still have an offensive case on the table. You know, we can not only beat this attack on us, we can turn the tables. If we win this case, the tables are going to get turned and we're going to be in the catbird seat. That's the way it's going to be. And one thing I'd just like to say to people, as far as like the importance of supporting the fundraiser, which you can see the URLs for that on the screen. Everybody's frustrated about the way that this country and this world is going in a lot of ways. There's still some opportunities here and there for us to voice our opinions about things, but it just washes away, to quote Blade Runner, like tears in the rain, it's just gone. But the things that actually matter seem to be out of our reach. They seem to be controlled by people with lots of money and lots of resources, powerful interests, the Democrat Party, the Republican Party, and so forth. This is your opportunity to take a small but very powerful core of activists, myself and the others involved in this, and I've been fighting so hard, and regardless of what happens, I am punching way, way, way above my weight limit. And so every amount of money that you can give to this is going to help to affect the course of history. We can defeat a much larger opponent, and we take loss after loss. They back us up, take down our history, take down our statues, take our rights. It's time that we get a victory, and we, in a court of law, basically sock them in the nose and say, back up, no more.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is great. Who are some of the expert witnesses that they are bringing in to establish their case?
That's part of their whole smoke and mirror strategy, is they're bringing in these expert witnesses, which is something that we can't compete with them on, and because expert witnesses cost a lot of money. That's why we have such a high total on our fundraiser. They're probably spending six figures on these expert witnesses, and they're extremist researchers. One of them, his name is Pete Seamy, and he's been involved in researching right-wing people exclusively for many decades, whereas the majority of people in his field, I think, were focused more on Islamic extremism and so forth. And he's been trying to make the case for many decades that it's actually white people who are the terrorists, and it's white people who should be on lists and, should have their rights taken away because they're too dangerous. The same thing with his co-author, which is a woman named Kathleen Blee, and her primary research was done on what she calls female racist activists. So she would research elderly women who were in the Klan back in the day or whatever. And so these people think that there's some parallel to draw between us and them. And what basically, because there is no evidence of a conspiracy, there is no communication at all with James Fields, there is nobody saying we're going to go and attack minorities or whatever, certainly not any of the people that they sued. So they've got to find a way to fabricate it. And so what they did is they hired these expert witnesses to come up with this report, and they do a number of things. Number one, they try and make it sound like the alt-right, white nationalist, whatever you want to call it, white identity space is all a conspiracy unto itself, which shouldn't be legally valid, by the way. You know, courts have already determined that Black Lives Matter can't be sued. It's a movement, not a group. So what they try and say is that everybody, including podcast hosts, activists, skinheads, Ku Klux Klan people, everybody is part of a conspiracy called the white supremacist movement, which is not a real thing, but they're trying to make it sound like everybody's working together, like skinheads attack minorities and they get rankings to level up in their organization or street cred or something. And we're similar, like we cheer on acts of violence or something like that. And really, if you listen to these people and their ideas, that what they consider to be part of white supremacy in this country includes school teachers and all kinds of things. They are really out there in terms of how vast they think this white supremacist conspiracy is. But the second element of it is they say that there's that white supremacists use something called doublespeak, which they say, which is really a nasty, nasty sort of libel to level against somebody. Because, for instance, in some of my chats, I'm talking about, well, if things get ugly, I would recommend using like something you've got as a free speech tool for self-defense. So obviously, what I'm talking about getting ugly is the Antifa attacking us, which everybody knew was going to happen. So they want to say, oh, that's doublespeak. When they say self-defense, they mean offensive violence and attacking racial minorities. So it's like the evidence isn't there to support what they're saying. So they want to use your words that are saying the exact opposite against you. No, their words are still supporting our theory, even though they say the opposite. It's really insidious. And so every single thing that is going to go against their hypothesis that this was a violent conspiracy, they're still going to use against us. And these phony researchers who are being paid to say this stuff are going to give them the ability to make that argument. And then the last thing that they're going to say is that with the white supremacist movements, there's something called front stage, backstage, where people say things privately that is different than what they say publicly. So they would say, oh, well, they're saying publicly that this is a peaceful event or a free speech event. And then privately, they're talking about violence or whatever. So it's totally bunk stuff. The only thing that we ever talked about privately with regard to violence was the fact that Antifa was going to attack us. So they can't take that and try to pretend like Antifa doesn't exist and we're just violent people using doublespeak and hiding things from the public. Everybody knew Antifa was going to attack, both public and private. But that is the nature of like the way that they're trying to throw up a bunch of smoke and cause a lot of distractions so that people who hate us already can maybe look at the evidence that is lacking and say, well, I still want to vote against them anyway because of these expert witnesses.
Well, there's not a lot I can do. I'm hosting this live stream, obviously, and I want to encourage people to donate. But one thing I am going to definitely do is get my little brain trust that Countercurrents consists of, and I don't just mean the people who co-host my Sunday streams at regular time, but Countercurrents is kind of an informal think tank. I'm going to get our people, I'm going to mobilize our people to go through these expert witnesses' books and articles with a fine-tooth comb and just come up with whatever we can. It would be very, very interesting to run all of these people's writings through a plagiarism detector, see if they're plagiarizing one another. It's not uncommon in academia, especially in highly politically motivated axe grinding, quote unquote, research like these people are doing for something like that to happen. There's a fellow who works for AMREN who found that some black BLM supporter was plagiarizing. And this guy was an academic, was plagiarizing some white academic, an anti-racist academic. It's should be a firing offense for an academic to be caught plagiarizing. So there's a lot that can be done. A lot of these people are very shady. A lot of them are very phony. A lot of them use extremely bad arguments. So I'm going to get our guys working on this stuff, Blee and her co-author, and see if we can maybe find some things that might be useful to you. It'd be very, very interesting, for instance, to see what their criteria are for you being a criminal conspiracy and see if it applies to what they're doing with the Sines v. Kessler suit against you and with Antifa and so forth. Things like that could be very, very useful, definitely. So that's one thing that I really want to do to help out is I'm going to get some of our people going over this with a magnifying glass to see if we can maybe shake some of these people's credibility. Why not? They're highly paid, but we have dedicated amateurs and the truth is on our side.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And I'd be curious to see what comes of it. And just for your support generally and the support of Countercurrents, you know, a lot of the people who have been helping out the most with this fundraiser, yourself, Jared Taylor, Peter Brimelow, and others, weren't even at Charlottesville. But I think that it's important for the people who have some responsibility and some common sense and want to see, you know, victories in this movement to look at things even that don't directly concern them and say this has an impact. And that is severely lacking in some areas. And it is just a real blessing to have folks like you guys that are supporting us. In right-wing politics generally, there is just a problem with people not putting their money where their mouth is, both literally and figuratively. And now is the time. I mean, this is like, if you've ever played sports, there's a time, you know, when you're going to take that shot, you know, you're going to throw that punch, you're going to throw that kick, whatever it is. And now it is, it's time to have the killer instinct and to win. And I'm glad that there are folks like you and the others who have that killer instinct and want to win and aren't totally narcissistic, self-obsessed, can look at other projects and help out with that. So it's been a great blessing to have your support, and I thank you for your help and for everybody who's donated so far. I thank you very much for your support, and I will always keep fighting to win this with, and all of your support invigorates me and keeps me motivated.
You know, there's a review that I just put up of this classic David Lean movie, Lawrence of Arabia. And near the end of the movie, the Arabs take over Damascus, and then they basically muck things up because they're not used to running an urban civilization with electrical generators and telephones and things like that. And at a certain point at this big meeting where they're all screaming at each other, somebody says, "A fire has broken out in the such and such district." And the response is, "That is not our district. That doesn't matter." And T.E. Lawrence says, "The fire will spread." Yeah. And it's just that's how people need to look at this. Yeah. It's Jason Kessler's fire. No, the fire will spread. And we have to stop these things. We have to stamp these things out. And we can't be short-sighted and stuck up and selfish, because that's actually, well, it's not in our self-interest to be selfish in a petty way like this. I have this view, and I've always held this view, that a rising tide in the movement floats all the boats, and that we should promote one another rather than try and tear one another down, because it diminishes us all. If we don't. Anyway, so I want to just thank some of the people. I know time is running short. I want to thank some of the people who've donated here at DLive. I don't want to miss out on them. Old Man Yinzer has donated a lemon. Gaddius has donated a diamond. Bartleby, one diamond. Boycott, one diamond. Hadrian was right, one diamond. Mario's 88, one Ice Cream and 14 Lemons, JSN, 1 Ice Cream, Nordic Sun, 6 Ice Cream, Das Newt, 1 Ice Cream, Gadius, 5 Ice Cream, Nordic Sun, 11 Lemons, 4 Null, 5 Ice Cream, Boycott, 729, 1 Lemon, John Shepherd Smith, 1 Lemon, Marios, 88, 14 Lemons, Technocrat Slave, 1 Diamond, and JSN, 1 Ice Cream. Also, Jason, do you have a chance to answer a question from Gadius, who's donated $24 US? I'll just put it out there. Not Charlottesville related, but I'd like to know where Mr. Kessler gets off writing exposés on poor, defenseless journalists from humble beginnings like Jared Holt, who are just doing their job for the American people. Doesn't Mr. Kessler know how vulnerable and crucial Jared Holt is to our democracy, or valuable and crucial he is? I guess this is a reference to something you published at VDare, just exposing a lot of leftists turn out to be children of privilege. So do you want to mention that? Maybe we can share a link to that in the chat.
Sure. Yeah. And that all of the articles that I write for VDare are up on my website, jasonkessler.us. I'm assuming you liked the article. I'm glad you liked it. That was a major research project for me. I don't get a chance to write many articles during the summer because I'm so busy. But during the winter, I had time to research these various Antifa who have put themselves out there as major doxers. This was Jared Holt and Christian Egzu, Emily Gorchensky, Molly Conger, and Talia Laban. I think a few others, but yeah, it turned out to be a really popular article. And all of them, they're just so wealthy. You know, their families own huge farms, have millions of dollars in properties and resources. Talia Laban, you know, I mean, she freely admits that she was a legacy student at Harvard and had bad grades and only got in because her father went to Harvard. And he's a CEO of a bunch of companies. These people are all attacking working class folks. You know, you look at a lot of the right wing people, many people are either who engage in dissident politics. They aren't able to hold a normal job. So they're either independently wealthy or they have to work blue collar jobs, you know, because that's the one occupational area where you can still hold dissident right wing beliefs and nobody's going to fire you for that. But you know, these Antifa, they're wealthy scumbags, you know, very bad people who are going after firefighters, police officers, school teachers, mechanics, plumbers, people who work hard for a living and trying to, in their words, dehome them, make them homeless, make them have splits and ruptures in their families. Just a lot of nasty, nasty stuff. All the while, they're pretending to be working class heroes themselves, communist revolutionaries, but rich mommy and daddy are never more than a phone call away. And besides the articles that I wrote, I would highly recommend another article that specifically focused on Jared Holt. I didn't write that one, but I did some of the research, and it really, he has all these podcasts that he's doing where he's saying some really awful things, condoning the milkshaking violence, saying that he'd really love to see someone beat the shit out of what's her name? I can't remember the blonde conservative commentator. But he had a lot of really noxious things that he was saying. And yet he's working for Atlantic Council, which is funded by the major corporations. His girlfriend works for the Biden administration and is helping dole out money that is going to various countries and so forth. Yeah, Jared Holt, be there. And I unfortunately got to start to wrap things up soon because I do have another responsibility coming up soon.
Well, that's great. You've already, I've kept you more than 13 minutes after our regular time anyway. So I want to just thank you for coming on. I want to thank the listeners. You've had more than 100 at the peak. And of course, this will go up on Countercurrents tomorrow, free for the whole world to listen to. I want everybody who can donate to donate. GiveSendGo.com/UniteTheRight and the utrdefense.org. Also go to entropystream.live/Jason Kessler with a K and help out. It's very, very important. I think we should come together on this. I want this to be a big win. I want there to be a lot of good feeling about this. I want this to be a big red pill. I'd like to see some unity in the right around winning for a change with Unite the Right. The Unite the Right was actually very divisive, and it was a big setback for a lot of people. A lot of people lost their platforms. A lot of people disappeared. A lot of people lost jobs, were doxxed, etc. It was bad for us. And instead of just taking a loss, taking an L and retreating, Jason came back and did Unite the Right 2, which was actually a real propaganda success. I have an article about it at Countercurrents. And he's been fighting these lawsuits ever since, which I think is enormously valuable. So let's unite around Unite the Right this time and actually win this one and support Jason. That's how I want to end this. So support Jason. We will have all the links up in the future. And when this goes on Countercurrents, we'll put it up on BitChute, et cetera. And I hope this will continue to produce donations well into the future as more people discover this, because as we go into October, I think there's going to be a lot more coverage of this. A lot more people are going to be doing searches and things like that. We want this to be out there attracting money, because God knows the enemy is just piling up millions and millions of dollars. Remember, when Joe Biden announced that he was running for president, he mentioned Charlottesville. This they want to meme this into a cornerstone for them, a giant victory for them and a giant defeat for us. And we have the power to stand against that. And I think that we need to do this while we can. So this is a great opportunity. So thanks again, Jason. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening. And just give us a few final words and remind us of how people can get in touch with you.
Yeah, you can get in touch with me on Twitter, twitter.com/themaddimension. My website, jasonkessler.us. I'm also on Gab and Telegram. I just want to thank everybody for their support. It means a lot. And please help spread the word, share the broadcast with other people so they can see it even after the fact. We'll see in October, we'll see you guys in October. We'll try and get a victory for you. It's going to be a hell of a thing, and it's going to come up real quick where, it's quiet now because the enemy wants it to be quiet. They don't want people to know about our fundraiser or any of the other good things that we're doing. They want to drain us of any support or any notoriety for what we're doing. But then in October, when they get their media allies on board and that whole juggernaut, that whole monster is coming for us, it's going to be everywhere. And at that point, many folks might wish that they had supported when they still had the opportunity.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
we have to have low time preferences, folks, and think far into the future. That's important. That's how we win. That's a systematic advantage for our side if we behave that way. So, folks, I am going to be back with Frody Midyard and Millennial Woes in less than 3 hours at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for our regular Sunday Countercurrents Radio live stream. And I hope you'll be back for that as well. And Jason, we will not only cover this trial, but let's try and get together at least once or twice before it actually goes to court, just to keep people appraised of what's happening. I think this is very, very important.
Sounds good. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And we will definitely have you back on another episode of Countercurrents Radio. Take care.
Glad to be here. Take care.